Okay, dear friends in Dhamma, so we have come to the next part of this mindfulness for young adult session. So that is a short Dhamma sermon with respect to a particular sutta. And these days we are discussing the very first sutta of Suttanipata. Suttanipata is one of the very important books available in the Kuddaka Nikaya. That is actually the shorter collections of the sermons or the suttas. And there are Suttanipata is one of the very respected volume because it consists of very interesting sermons, very interesting suttas. Some are really familiar to us, Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta. Likewise, very interesting and quite popular sermons are there. Uraga Sutta is the very first sutta available in the Suttanipata. And it is basically Buddha use a particular incident or particular characteristic of the serpents. So as you all know, serpents time to time sheds off its worn out skin. And when they are doing it, they are doing it with sort of dispassion, disenchantment, because they want to get rid of that. They want to let it go. They want to shed it off. So Buddha takes this as an analogy to explain the spiritual path. In the spiritual path though, also, we have to time let go of various things. And we are sometimes holding to things and grasping things. As a result of that, we are suffering in a way. And that's why we call it as kind of the five aggregates or clinging aggregates, that is the cause of suffering or that is the suffering. And very much like if we are able to let go of that attachment or grasping, then there's a sort of a release. So Buddha, in order to deliver his message, in order to explain the Dhamma, again and again highlights this point, how a serpent uses or how a serpent lets go of the worn out skin. And now actually we have reached the 14th verse of this sutta, and it is going like this. Yassanusaya na santi kechi, moolacha akusala samulhatase, sobhikku jahati oraparang urago jinnamiva tacham purana. Now this sobhikku jahati oraparang urago jinnamiva tacham purana. Now this is a repeated verse or repeated sentence available in all the verses. So this is the point that Buddha highlights again and again. So bhikkhu jahati oraparam. So the particular monk, particular practitioner, he lets go or he gives up here and there, here and the beyond. He is not attached to here and not attached to the future. Or not attached to the present, not attached to the past, not attached to the future. Not attached to this realm and not even wishing for a next realm. So very much like a detached mindset and not trying to keep or not trying to establish anywhere, letting go of both sides. And how he is doing it, as a serpent sheds its old worn out skin. Urago jinnamiva tacham purana. Like a serpent sheds out its worn out skin. Now here in this particular verse, yassanusaya na santi kechi. There is no any latent tendency, anusaya. And moolacha akusala samuhatasi. So all the roots of the unwholesomeness completely uprooted. Now very much like here we are talking about an arahant, where he was able to completely remove the anusaya, latent dispositions. And not at all, not only that, and he actually was able to, as a result of that, able to uproot the roots of the akusala. Lobha, dosa, moha, greed, hatred and delusion are considered as the akusala moola, or the roots of the unwholesome defilements. And all those are uprooted, and again the seven kinds of anusaya are also uprooted. Now actually anusaya is a term. Sometimes we are referring time to time when we are discussing Dhamma. And what are the anusaya? The term anusaya has a kind of a meaning where Buddha mentioned anusaya as a latent tendency or latent dispositions. This is the kind of a translation typically given. And latent dispositions are defilement which lie along with or lie common, kind of dormant. Where it is not very much appearing. You can't immediately recognize their presence. But when they are getting activated, then you get sort of an active, obsessive kind of thoughts. And that is when they are coming to the surface. So very much like they are latent. And very much like they are sleeping. But when they are active, then various thoughts are popping up to the mind. And there we can say, now they are in the active mood. Actually, there are three levels of defilements that we can recognize, or we can say three, levels of defilements that we can recognize. Anusaya level is the most dormant or most latent kind of level. And then they come to the surface, what we call as the pariyutthana, where the presence of thoughts are visible, or presence of various signs are visible. Mind is somewhat crowded, mind is somewhat occupied with various thoughts and various maybe even defilements or various signs, marks. Mind has lost its previous clarity. Mind has again become burdened. Now this is the place now certain defilements have come to the surface of the mind, what we call as the pariyutthana. And if we haven't properly recognized them, if we are not properly treating with them, then they may overwhelm us, and they may grow, and we even support them. And ultimately, we start too much thinking and get on to the different kinds of conceptual proliferation. And ultimately, we become a victim of that whole process, and we may even breach a precept. We even do a kind of a transgression. Now we may even kill an animal, get on with the kind of a stealing kind of process, maybe sexual misconduct, lying, having a drink, etc., etc. So different kinds of transgressions can happen. So that is where we call as the vithikkam, where we have gone to the extent of transgression. So here we can recognize three levels of defilements. First level is the inactive state, what we are discussing today as the anusaya. Then we have the second level, that is where they have become active, but still we haven't made any bodily action. We haven't taken any verbal action. And mind also haven't fairly deluded or fairly polluted, but still the agitation is going on. That is where we call as the pariyutthana. Then when it is coming to the transgression level, now things have happened. So we have become a victim of this whole process. Now we are unable to stop ourselves. We are arguing with another, lying, and maybe even hitting another, getting into quarrels, arguments, etc. So that is where the transgression happens. Now, in that sense, so how to overcome the vithikkama? How to overcome the transgression? So that is through the virtue. So that is through the morality, through sila. So when you are adhering to a particular type of morality, that's kind of a restraint. So that is where we are able to calm down ourselves. We know that these are the regulations, these are the laws. And to some extent, then we are not doing any kind of a transgression. So we are make use of various precepts. Panadipata veramani, adinnadana veramani, kamesu micchachara veramani, musavada veramani, suramere majjapama dattana veramani. So likewise, we adhere to certain rules, precepts. So for the benefit of ourselves and to the benefit of the whole society. So both benefits are there. And in other sense, we can call, we are very much handling the vithikkama kilesa, transgression level defilements. But how to still, the mind may be burning. You may still burn with lust. You may still burn with anger, even though you are not getting to quarrel. Then how are we going to calm down the, say, obsessive level of defilements? Pariyutthana kilesa. So that is through the meditation, that is through the samadhi, the concentration practice. Say you do anapanasati, or you do metta meditation, you do buddha anusati, you do asubha meditation, many different types of samatha meditations you can use, and using which you can calm down the defilements. So we can say calming down hindrances. If you have sensual desire, you are able to calm down that. If you have kind of an anger, you can calm down that. And say if you have srotha and torpor, using the meditation also you can calm down that. You can remove that srotha and torpor, because again and again your mind has to actively participate in this upcoming event or upcoming present moment activity. Again and again breathing happens, so you have to be ready to recognize each and every breath. So mind become quite active. As a result of that, there is no chance for the srotha and torpor. On the other hand, you do proper examination of whatever the object. As a result of that, there can't be any doubt, any perplexity, because you are so sure about what's going on. So likewise, by means of developing these jhana factors, so by means of developing these samadhi factors, so we are able to calm down these hindrances, and in other terms, these obsessive defilements. And now, in a way, temporarily, we are able to address the second level. So that is the pariyutthana kilesa, obsessive level of kilesa, obsessive level of defilements. Now mind is calm. Mind has some clarity. Mind has some peace. But still we can't sure when we again get agitated, when the mind again get defiled, again get sort of angry, again how mind become lustful. Still some vulnerability is there. Why? So that is where Buddha is answering. Now even though you feel that there's a kind of a calmness available in the mind, but you can't guarantee that. You can't give a certificate to you. Because there are some lie dormant defilements. So that is the anusaya, latent tendencies. They are like hidden. Very much like if you see a kind of a charcoal pitten. So there may not be any flames, but there may be burning charcoal in the bottom. Sometimes they may rise up, they may start burning, and even there's a kindling can happen. So likewise in the mind also, even though at the moment probably you have done a lot of metta meditation, as a result of that your mind is not angry. You are able to maintain some calm, serene kind of an attitude. But still you can't guarantee on the next moment probably you might get angry. So that is why sometimes we say during the retreat situation, say you are practicing some very good meditation, say metta meditation for example, but once you get onto the public vehicle, say you are getting to the bus, you are getting to the train, then maybe someone is making a little noise, or someone is not happy about you, someone is not respecting you, you immediately get angry. So that means even though you have practiced metta, it doesn't assure that your latent tendencies are uprooted. So still the potential is there, still the vulnerability is there. So that is where we need to be careful not to overestimate our kind of an achievement. So sometimes when we practice, even through the samatha meditation, our defilements are fairly subsided. And if you are practicing fair amount of jhana and such kind of deep absorptions, deep concentrations, they actually cut off various defilements temporarily. Sometimes we overestimate ourselves thinking, now there is no lust, there is no anger, so I am so and so. So we give some overestimations. But unfortunately, when the power of the concentration reduces, again these defilements starts to pop up. So then how are we going to address the main issue? That is in the way the Buddha's main teaching, which is not equal to the other teachers, where Buddha is the one who has given a proper methodology to eradicate anuseya, latent tendencies. So after we are able to calm down the mind, so then actually without simply being in a deep concentration, we have to allow the mind to freely move. Then only we can get a clear understanding what is really still possible, still available in the mind. So if you are strictly holding your mind, or if you are not allowing the mind to move, you are not allowing the mind to think, then probably temporarily, by force, you can maintain that for a short time. But at the very next moment, once you release your grip, again, mind may think various things. So what we do is, in a way, first of all, we prepare some sort of a proper background, proper skills to handle this situation. It's not that we simply allow the mind to play as it like, but we are very much like now a trained person. So we have trained in mindfulness. We have trained some samadhi, concentration. Not only that, we can properly recognize each and every subtle aspects. Maybe using the kayanupassana, we may be developing that. Each and every breath we have observed, different facets of the breath we have observed, whether it is longer, shorter, warmer, cooler. So these are very subtle aspects of the breathing. Now these are actually producing some kind of a skill in the mind. So now your mind has some ability to clearly comprehend something. Very sharp attention. Now with such a skill, when it is available, now you are slowly become confident. You know how to develop that, how to reach that level, and even how to maintain that. Now you allow slowly to observe the mind even. Maybe, I mean, no need to go immediately to the mind. Even if you start practicing Vedana Anupassana. Typically, when we consider feelings, so when we are going through some pleasurable feelings, we immediately grasp that, we immediately want to have that more, we immediately want to enjoy that. So this actually promotes anuseya. Raga anuseya will be developed. That means lustful tendencies in the mind are further developed when we are unknowingly attached to these kinds of pleasurable feelings. On the other hand, when we are going through some suffering, some painful feelings, now there's a kind of an agitation in the mind, you want to get rid of it. Maybe you are blaming another person, you are putting the wrong or putting the fault onto the other side, you are arguing. So these are all patiga, the anger, aversion that you are developing. So on the other hand, patigahanuseya is the one that you are developing. The latent tendency with respect to latent tendency of the anger is what we are developing. Now that is where the fetter of aversion, or the latent tendency of aversion, is what we are developing. So in that sense, we need to understand. So whenever we go through some pleasurable sensations, pleasurable feelings, if we are blindly attached to them, if we want to hold them, if we are claiming them as they belong to me, or they are myself, they are I am. So that indicates that I am promoting latent tendency of lust. On the other hand, when I am going through some painful feelings, some suffering, if I have some aversion towards that, then I am developing the latent tendency of patiga, or the aversion. On the other hand, if I am ignorantly, completely, unmindfully handling my life, then I am not aware of the other what you call the equanimous type of feelings. So in the other terms, we are developing ignorance, the latent tendency of avijja. Now you can see, even we are going through different kinds of sensations, different kinds of feelings, and we sometimes even allow it to grow to the level of emotions, and we are promoting some kind of an anuseya. Probably we are quite innocent, but unfortunately you are developing different kinds of latent tendencies. So that is why the practice is quite important. That is why the mindfulness is quite important. So we have to know what is really going on, how the mind is behaving. Is attached to something? Is it attached to something? Is it holding something? Is it grasping something? Has it agitated? Or is it subject to some kind of an aversion or lust? Any kind of a defilement? So these are the things that in a way we have to be careful. So if we are on guard, then probably we can minimize those different defilements, those different personality traits. In other terms, we are not supporting the anusaya. So now we are practicing in a particular path which is opposite or which is removing the anusaya or declining the anusaya, attacking the anusaya. Now, as I mentioned, there are seven types of anusaya mentioned in the suttas. Say, for example, in the Patama Anusaya Sutta available in the Anguttara Nikaya, so Buddha explains seven or lists down seven anusaya. Kama Raga Anusaya, the fetter of compliance or fetter of lust. Patigaha Anusaya, fetter of aversion. Ditta Anusaya, the fetter of views. Vichikicca Anusaya, the fetter of doubt. Mana Anusaya, the fetter of conceit. Bhava Raga Anusaya, fetter of lust for existence. Avijja Anusaya, fetter of ignorance. Now these are the seven types of anusaya that listed in the suttas. Kamaraga anusaya. So this is quite easy to understand. So even though at the moment probably my mind does not have lust, probably the next moment lust can arise. So we have to understand that potential. We have to understand that vulnerability. So that's a kind of a latent tendency for sensual desire to arise. At the moment, probably I have done some meditation, I have done some asubha meditation, so the mind is free from lust. But the next moment, probably, when there's a beautiful sight is available, picture is available, again that latent tendency might pop up. Raga, lust can arise in the mind. So the cause is kama raga anusaya. Then we have the patigaha anusaya. Even though I am maintaining a very calm, serene, loving kindness in the mind, it doesn't guarantee that I am able to maintain that forever. Because still there is a tendency to become angry. So till that tendency is uprooted, so at the next moment, the mind can get again angry. Dittanusaya. That means mind sometimes get on to some sort of a fixation. So you are thinking about a particular thing, again and again you are thinking in the same pattern. And ultimately, mind become conditioned in that type of a thinking. And you believe that. You are strongly fixing your mind. And even when someone is coming and telling you it is wrong, it is not the proper way, still you can't give it up because you are strongly holding on to that. And this kind of a tendency is available. Probably at the moment, your mind is free from such kind of a fixation. But at another moment, it can get on to such kind of a fixation. Now say for example, you are now in a relaxed mood. So your mind is not agitated. Your mind is not feeling kind of a tight. It is quite soft. But it doesn't guarantee you are able to maintain that forever. Say someone else is coming and asking you to come and go for a picketing. And he is talking more about the different, say, pollution or different kinds of unfair situations, or etc., etc. So now you also get agitated. You also become angry. So you also start thinking. Again and again you are thinking. So your mind also become fairly conditioned. And now you want to get revenge, or even you have a kind of a proper, or rather a kind of a particular mindset. Now that particular person is able to kind of condition your mind. That particular person is able to sort of dictate your mind, so that you also in the same type of a thinking pattern, and he was able to catch you even. And now you are also in the same group. You are also coming to the same group. You are in that particular team or group or party, and you are thinking the same pattern. So dittanusaya is there. So if it is available, then there's a potential for you to become sort of fixed, get into a kind of a fixed view, even to a wrong view. And on the other hand, then we have vichikicchanusaya. So vichikicchanusaya is called the fetter of doubt, where say you can get on to some kind of a doubt. At the moment, your mind may be free. You don't have any doubt. But unfortunately, at the next moment, probably your mind can get into some kind of a doubt. Probably you may be thinking, is it correct? Is it wrong? Or say, is that the proper path? Or this is the proper path? So likewise, different kinds of doubts can arise in the mind because the tendency is available. At the moment, your mind may be free from doubts, but still the tendency is available. And mana anusaya is a very subtle anusaya, subtle tendency. So you are always kind of measuring yourself with respect to the others, me and not me. I am and not I. So kind of a measurement is there. Always there's a I-centered thinking. I am here, you are there. So we always have that kind of a dichotomy. I am here, you are there. So I am good, you are wrong. I am correct, you are wrong. Or I am wrong, you are correct. So likewise, we have this measurement going on. So probably at the moment, your mind may be free from such kind of I-making, mind-making, or any kind of a conceit. But till mananusaya is available, again you can get caught to that type of thinking. Again someone is coming to your mind, again you are measuring, okay, he is strong, I am correct. So again mananusaya is inactive. And bhavaraga anusaya. Now this is where, I mean, even though fetter of lust for existence is translated here like that, but in the subtle level, so at the moment I am not happy, I want to become someone. I want to come to a different state. I want to become rich. I want to be beautiful. I want to become a sotapanna. I want to become an arahant. So this kind of a tendency in the mind, the becoming, the desire to become. So that can be operative in the mind. So in the long run, so that is where we have a kind of a tendency to born as a particular person. Maybe I want to become a celestial being. I want to become a Brahma. I want to become a Buddha. So whatever it is, so you have kind of a desire to exist, desire to manifest as someone else. So that is where the bhavaraga anusaya, where your mind has kind of an inclination always. Probably if you are practicing mindfulness at the moment, maybe your mind may be fairly free from such kind of a tendency. You are able to maintain your attention in the present moment. But still, it is not guaranteed that the next moment when your mind becomes unmindful, that you may not get caught to bhavaraga anusaya, we don't know. Because if the anusaya is available, latent tendency is available, there's a fair chance that again you get caught. Avijjanusaya is the one, in a way we have the wrong understanding or not understanding the Four Noble Truths. We don't know there is suffering. We don't know what is the cause. And we don't know how to sort of let go of that cause and to realize the calmness, realize the cessation. And we don't know the path. So that is in a way the avijja, the ignorance. And so that is available as a tendency in the mind. And again, there's a tendency in the mind to again and again promote a self-view. I am a male. I am a female. I am a mother. I am a father. So likewise, I mean, we have different kinds of conceptual, kind of ideation or conceptual individualization. So again and again, we are making a person. So that potential is available in the mind, so we don't know when I would manifest as another person. At the moment, probably mind is calmed down, there is no any kind of such manifestation. But on the next moment, again, I can become someone. So therefore, these are quite subtle tendencies in the mind. So how to overcome them? So there's a very interesting point I like to add here. So in Madhupindika Sutta, Buddha mentioned, Yato nidanam bhikkhu purissaṃ papancha saññā saṅkhā samudācharanti etta ce natti abhinanditabbaṃ abhivaditabbaṃ ajjose tabbaṃ esevanto rāgānusayānaṃ esevanto patighānusayānaṃ esevanto ditthānusayānaṃ esevanto vichikicchānusayānaṃ esevanto mānānusayānaṃ esevanto bhavarāgānusayānaṃ esevanto avijjānusayānaṃ. Now all types of different anusaya, latent tendencies are listed here. So how to overcome? So that is the overcoming of conceptual proliferation. So you can see, if we are able to minimize conceptual proliferation, papancha, so that has a huge impact on anusaya. So through thinking, through obsessive thinking, unnecessary thinking, overthinking, we are promoting different kinds of anusaya. But on the other hand, if we are able to calm down the mind, quieten the mind, silent the mind, avoid any kind of unnecessary thinking, so that basically has a counter effect to anusaya. So Bhikkhu Bodhi has translated here, Bhikkhu, as to the source through which perceptions and notions born of mental proliferation beset a man. Now, typically, those things are besetting a man, overwhelming a man. But here, a practitioner, if nothing is found therein to delight, now this particular person is not getting delighted on those things. Say a particular another person, a kind of an unmindful person. So when he sees something, immediately he becomes overwhelmed by thinking too much about it. He becomes a victim of that very overthinking. But if a practitioner is able to properly handle it, even though he sees it, that's it. He is able to stop it at the seeing level, not agitating the mind. If he hears something, he is not allowing his mind to get agitated. He is able to stop it at that level. So he is not getting to any kind of a delight. There is no any kind of an adherence. He is not getting into that. He is not thinking about it. He is not coloring his mind with respect to the experience. He is not overwhelmed by that experience. He was able to maintain the kind of the clarity of the mind. His mind is unshaken. So this sort of a thing, if one is able to maintain, so that has a huge blow onto this anusaya. So that is why Buddha mentioned very interestingly here in the Madhupindika Sutta, for the typical potential conceptual proliferations can happen, but here the practitioner is now minimizing that, calming down that. He is not getting to delight with that, and he is not welcoming that, and he is not holding that. As a result of that, his mind become calm, peaceful, not involved, unagitated, not attached. As a result of that, all the different kinds of anusayas start to fade away. It is not immediately that one is cutting them off. Rather, slowly these anusaya will fade away. So this is one technique Buddha mentioned, an interesting technique. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bante.
Yeah.
We have 5 questions today. The first one is a general question. Dear Bante, I have heard many times that when one practices, in order to progress along the path, the 5 faculties, Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Prajna should be aligned. When does this happen in our practice, Bante? Is there a way or indications for us to know that this process is happening with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, each and every individual faculty we need to little aware of when they are present. So, for example, as you listed, Saddha, Viriya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. So, they are the five faculties. So, sometimes we know, okay, now the mind is quite faithful. I want to pay respect to the Buddha. I want to chant. So, the kind of faith is fairly predominant in the mind. On some other occasions, say, effort is predominant. Say, you want to practice more, you want to read, you want to diligently attend to a particular retreat, you want to sit for a long time. So, a kind of a diligence is there, sort of an effort is there. So, likewise, so you can recognize how time to time these different faculties come forward. Say, when sati, mindfulness is there, say you can recognize, okay, each and every activity I can do mindfully. But on certain other days, I am not mindful like that. I am quite ignorant or quite unmindful. But today, okay, I have fair mindfulness or sharp mindfulness. Now you can recognize the operation of the mindfulness, sati. On the other hand, the concentration. Say if you want to read a book, previously suppose there are so many distractions, you spend fair amount of time. But today, for example, okay, you have good concentration. And as a result of that, we can quickly, within a short period, you can finish a book. Because your concentration is very high, good, and it is predominant. On the other hand, the wisdom. So wisdom, when it is available, so you have very sharp, penetrative knowledge. And you can quickly recognize a solution. And different ways you can look at the particular problem. So that is where the wisdom is available, or it is predominant. Now, balancing of this is quite important, and actually the middle, you can see the mindfulness is placed. So mindfulness is the one which is making as a kind of a monitoring process. It is the one monitoring which side is up or down. Now, saddha has to be balanced with wisdom, panya. So if the mind is too much faithful, then probably you may lose the wisdom part. If your mind do not have faith, then your mind is somewhat get on to very maybe angry type of wisdom. So you have no any compassion, you don't have any sympathy, rather always finding fault. So that kind of an attitude can be developed. So that means, so you have to have kind of a understanding about your mind, where whether enough faith is available or whether enough wisdom is available. If too much faith is available with less panya, then you are becoming so emotional. You want to always say offer various things. You always want to offer dana. You are not practicing enough vipassana. You are not getting involved in the meditation, you are not into investigation. So that is lack of wisdom, too much faith. On the other hand, if you don't have faith at all, so you are always critically thinking, you are always criticizing yourself and even the others, you are finding fault, little maybe even cunning. So that indicates that you don't have faith. So when we are able to honestly recognize these tendencies in the mind, so we need to balance faith with wisdom. On the other hand, effort and what you call the samadhi, the concentration also have to be balanced. At the beginning, we may have a fair amount of effort because our defilements are strong and we don't have enough mindfulness or concentration. So we have to have a very high effort. But later, when the mind is slowly calming down, slowly tamed, at that time we have to slowly reduce effort, allowing concentration to develop. And when concentration is developing, so probably now you have to loosen the effort so that concentration is now further developing. But on the other hand, if there is not sufficient effort is involved, probably concentration can lead to sort of drowsiness and even ultimately kind of sleepiness. So without getting into any sleepiness or drowsiness, how to maintain a very balanced concentration, collectedness of the mind. So that requires some amount of effort. So on the way, during your meditation session, so this effort and concentration has to be well balanced. So this is how we are to be practically attend to this. Faith and wisdom has to be balanced, and again the concentration and effort have to be balanced. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7. This is regarding mindful walking. Dear Bhante, walking practice. I have been practicing quite well for some time, and nowadays I don't get time to do any walking practice. I get 10 to 15 minutes of jogging or running time in the morning and thought of using the walking practice technique using during this time. However, due to the fast walk or jogging, I could not focus on the sensations of the sole of the foot, which I am used to. Instead, I could only observe the pressure and the impact of foot pounding the ground. I tried focusing on the breath and noting how the in-breath energizes the body and the out-breath calms down the body. This is something I could maintain throughout the running time, keeping the mind silent with minimal thoughts. I felt calm and happy afterwards. Is this something I can build as a practice? Initially verbalizing and noting how the in-breath energizes the body and the out-breath calms down the body while jogging and keeping the focus on this process. Thank you for your guidance and for this valuable program. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually that is also useful, but if you can pay more attention on the foot, that may be even challenging, and that may have very interesting effect or kind of an exercise to the mind. Because when you are practicing breathing while jogging, say you are in a way trying to pay attention to a fixed object, and your mind has in a way less exercise. But on the other hand, if you are able to keep your attention to each and every foot, so that is difficult in a way, because where you are placing your foot, where you are placing your left foot, where you are placing your right foot, and what is the pressure you can feel, what are the sensations available, and is it the heel which you are touching first. So I mean, these are difficult because you are running now, you are jogging. You are not doing a very slow practice, slow walking, but you have to quickly do it. So there's a kind of a challenge in that process. So if we are able to do that, that is also a kind of a very interesting process. You can try that. I mean, without unmindfully jogging, I mean, what you are trying to do is quite good. At the same time, you can try whether you can pay more attention to the foot and various sensations associated there, whether is it possible to recognize them. So that may be very interesting.
Question number 3 of 7. This is mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, my sitting practice is observing the breath, and after 15-20 minutes, I usually reach the relaxed state where the breath vanishes completely. As per your instructions, I try to stay in this state as much as possible. The usual experience here is appearance of various thoughts until the end of time. I try to observe these thoughts as a third person. When I'm doing the sitting practice, it is much easier to do this kind of unassociated observation. My question is, during the day-to-day activities, without this background, it is very hard to observe thoughts without further thinking. When I try to be vigilant on my thoughts, most of the time I realize I have generated more thoughts by judging the original thoughts. How can we do an unassociated thought observation during the day-to-day life with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think, as you said, I mean, it's difficult to do this during the day-to-day activities if we are not yet confident in our sitting and walking practice. So sitting and walking are the places that we are training the mind, and we are strengthening that ability. Later, when we are able to develop that, then maybe you can do it even during the day-to-day activities. So it is true. I mean, we may even promoting defilements, we may even promoting unnecessary thinking by getting to this practice, because our side is quite weaker still. But on the other hand, when we are developing our faculties during the sitting and walking, and say I'm walking while keeping the mind, or rather we are walking while observing the mind, not keeping your attention at the, say, sensations, rather slowly you are walking while allowing the mind to wander if it is necessary. But you are in the mindful space, watching the mind or guarding the mind. So that is where, in a way, we can say we are practicing Chittanupassana while walking, or Dhammanupassana while walking. So in that sense, so you can see, okay, different thoughts are coming. Again, I am not promoting them, I am not constructing them. Then quickly it is going away. Maybe another thought coming, ignorantly I have added something, then little construction, then little bit of improvement of that thought, then probably I am able to stop that, step back, and then it is going away. So likewise, we can recognize all these different mechanisms going on in the mind, constructions going on in the mind. So that's a kind of a self-realization, kind of a understanding. So more and more you do that, you become confident in this process. Probably you are doing it in a safe environment like sitting and walking, but later this skill, once it's available, you can apply even day-to-day activities. So therefore, don't worry, you may be able to come to this level.
Question number 4 of 7, this is a general question. Dear Bhante, we hear a lot about Samatha, Vipassana and the combined practice methods. For a practitioner, is there any advantage or disadvantage knowing what practice you are doing and aligning it with the prerequisites and the guidelines? Or is it just evolving and based on the current experience and progress, you adopt the next steps? Much merits for your insight.
Yeah, I think, they are going hand in hand, we can say. So certain teachers, actually they don't bother even to distinguish them. For example, Achan Cha doesn't have much distinction between Samatha and Vipassana, because it's not necessary. So if we are overemphasizing Samatha, or if we are overemphasizing Vipassana, so that is in a way not necessary. Rather, we can make use of both. Maybe at the beginning of Anapanasati, probably we are trying to establish mindfulness. And that is where type of Samatha practice. Again and again, we are trying to establish mindfulness. And assuming that breath is available, constant, and using breath as a kind of an anchor concentrate the mind. Type of Samatha practice. But later, say you start investigating the breath, recognizing its subtle aspects. So this is more towards Vipassana, and you are now practicing some aspects of Vipassana. But for even that to happen, you have to fix, or rather again and again, you have to keep your mind constantly concentrated on each and every breath. So the momentary concentration is there. So you can see the Samatha and Vipassana go hand in hand in that sense. And even later, if you are able to recognize a mind which is free from any grasping, now mind is free, appear like it is Samatha. Now you came through Vipassana, you did a lot of practice. So you understood the impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, and unself nature. That is why the mind has let go of. Now mind is free. And now this freedom somewhat appear like Samatha, but it is based on knowledge, it is based on wisdom. So the wisdom is non-grasping. You understood the futile nature of grasping. So there's a kind of an insight operative in the sort of the subconscious level in the mind. So there's a fair knowledge backing your freedom. So that is why sometimes it is mentioned the arahants. So have these two additional steps, Samma Jnana and Samma Vimutti. So they have the proper wisdom plus proper freedom. So both are there. Proper freedom is very much like Samatha. Proper wisdom is very much like Vipassana. So, try to make use of both. So no need to look down any of these. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 7, general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I am a regular practitioner. Does Pariyuttana Keles you mention, it's a bit confusing the question. This is one long sentence. Let me see. I am a regular practitioner. Does Pariyuttana Keles you mention, if I may be the observer when it's arising in the mind, yet the mind is deluded, agitated, yet no words or action taken. Sila is protected. In that situation, does karma happen?
I think I have a feeling of what you are asking.
Okay, sir.
So, I mean, there is no transgression, but mind is agitated, mind is defiled. But is it prone to accumulate any karma? So, it depends actually to what extent your mind is defiled. To what extent that I is promoted. So, you have become a person. So, that personality view, how stronger it is now. So, if it is fairly stronger, and you are intentionally thinking, so this intentional thinking can cause some amount of friction, some amount of karma, because you are intentional thinking. Maybe you are angry, you are sort of planning to get revenge, for example. Still, you haven't implemented that, but you are planning. So the mano karma is there. So therefore, we can say, yes, it depends. But on the other hand, suppose just a thought came and a little bit of agitation, but still you are observing it, you are mindfully aware of it. Still you haven't fully defeated by that thought, or you haven't fully defeated by that defilement. Still you are able to maintain mindfulness. You are under supervision, very much like. At that level, you can't say that you are intentionally thinking. So on the other hand, if I connect this to the Madhupindika Sutta as we touched today, so if you are not overwhelmed by the papancha, mental proliferation, so that means we are still safe. But at the very moment we become a slave to that papancha, overwhelmed by that papancha, even though you are not doing any bodily activity or verbal activity, so mind has completely deluded. So there are higher potential is there to accumulate karma.
Question number 8 of 6. This is a Dhamma Saman question. Dear Venerable Bhante, on the last line of the Dhamma talk today, Bhante, you concluded saying, eventually Anusaya will fade away. I wanted to ask Bhante, how does one know that those Anusaya has faded away? I have heard everything need to be pratyavesha. How does one pratyaveksha that anusaya is passing away? Thank you so much, Bhante. With metta.
It's a very difficult question in a way, because I still have anusaya, so I haven't myself come to that level, so I don't know how I might feel it. But on the other hand, very interesting suttas are there. For example, Venerable Anand once mentioned, it's quite obvious. Obvious to the level, say, for example, that you are inflicted with diabetics. So you have diabetics. And say the doctor is telling, okay, if you are to protect your life, you have to remove a limb. Now suppose this kind of a situation. Now, okay, so you reluctantly, so you allowed that because you want to protect yourself, no? Protect your life, so you allowed that. Now, okay, you went through an operation and now one leg is cut off. Now you recover from that and several years pass by and now you are used to that. Maybe you are using a clutcher and something. Now you are maintaining a typical life now. But the very moment that you consider, okay, I don't have a leg. So you don't need to again and again think that you don't have a leg. But the very moment you reflect, you understand, okay, there is no leg. There is one leg removed. So that is quite obvious. So Venerable Ananda mentioned likewise, so when anusaya are completely uprooted, so the person may know that through reflection. It is quite evident. I mean, it's difficult to say, I mean, how like, the last bit of anusaya may go away. I mean, we are thinking that kind of a pattern, how things are happening. We try to imagine. But Venerable Ananda mentioned, okay, that also happened. It is quite sure. Once you reflect back, okay, you know, okay, there is no anusaya. And on the other hand, we can say, even when the potential to prepare anusaya, or even when potential to defile the mind is available, if your mind is not getting defiled, if your mind is not getting agitated, if you are not getting angry, so that indicates some sort of a development. Say, for example, someone is blaming you, criticizing you. Previously assume that you are getting into trouble, you are getting to argue, and you are getting into quarrel, and you are fully promoting anusaya. But on the other hand, now, for example, if someone is criticizing, someone is blaming, while among the others, assume that you are able to maintain a calm mind. That means some kind of a development is there. So some kind of a potential is available in your mind, not to get agitated, not to promote anusaya, not to get the tendency of aversion. Or on the other hand, we can say the tendency of aversion is not getting activated through this criticism, through this blaming. So that means it is fairly weakened in a way, we can say. So likewise, through various practical situations, you can little test yourself whether these anusayas are at least little weakened. So you have to go through various difficulties, and you have to come across various problems. Probably on such situation, probably we can assess whether still strong anusaya levels are available or whether they have weakened because of the practice. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 8. This is again a Dhamma sermon question. Dear Bhante, today's Dhamma sermon and your excellent highlight about the technique on how to fade away anusaya by reducing mental proliferations. As the technique to reduce mental proliferations, can we assume that mindfulness practice is the answer? Much merits, Bhante, for this service.
Mindfulness practice, of course, plus vipassana practice. Because mindfulness alone can't do it. Mindfulness has to couple with clear comprehension, vipassana, wisdom, and all sort of things are there. I mean, so it's not just the bare mindfulness, but I mean, later you are get on to clear comprehension, you are practicing a fair amount of vipassana, wisdom. So all these together, we can say, giving the proper solution.
Question number 8 of 8, this is the last question for today. This is again a general question. Dear Bhante, how does one approach their desire to work hard to get ahead in their career, for example, becoming a specialist in a field, without getting caught in the desire of becoming? Should someone let go of that goal and be content with where they are, or is it okay to pursue to achieve higher educational pursuits? Thank you. That's the
Actually, it's a very interesting question. So are these all teachings asking us to stagnate ourselves, asking us to appear like kind of a defeated person, or to become kind of a timid, inactive person, a passive person? I don't think. Because Buddha promoted learning. Say Buddha asked us to learn Buddha's teaching. And say we have to in a way balance, say Buddha asks us even in the economic terms, okay, you have to learn, I mean, work hard, you have to earn money, you have to earn some wealth, and you have to spend that on behalf of your parents and others, and you have to protect, you have to deposit that, store that for future use. So likewise, I mean, some future type of investments are mentioned, and therefore, whatever the, even in the spiritual side, So Buddha didn't ask to stop even the spiritual growth. So that's why even he mentioned that he is not revealing whether someone is sotapanna, because if he know that, then he become ignorant, or rather ignorant, maybe less effortful, because he feel now he is safe. But Buddha didn't want to do that. Rather, he wants to put us into the practice more and more, so that ultimately we achieve the full goal. So likewise, Buddha as a teacher want to take us to the higher goal. So that indicate kind of a progressive type of indication, progressive kind of attitude, not only in the, say, the typical household life or the world life, but even in the spiritual side. So that means some effort, continuous effort, not being satisfied with some trivial results, they are mentioned. But on the other hand, are we fully driven by tanha, craving? So that is another kind of a reason that we need to look into. So is our effort promoting kind of a burden mind? Are we get stressed up because of this type of craving? Or are these type of desire have some proper motivation? Correct motivation. Say, I am studying more so that I have better understanding. I am studying more, say, I have a better opportunity to convince another person. Then I am able to properly pass the message. Then I am able to properly help another group of people. I may be thorough in my subject. I may less prone to various errors. So likewise, there may be some proper reasons, reasonable reasons, based on which we may be doing our higher studies or another type of practice, whatever it is, you are going for the next level, etc. Based on some proper reasons. But on the other hand, if you have some unfair reasons or craving-based reasons, say you are always going after a higher remuneration, always going after a higher reputation, you want to control others, or you want to sort of become the boss of the others, you want to sort of promote a self so that you feel conceited, you feel proud. So there we can say, okay, now we are driven by wrong motives. So defilements are the ones actually promoting our achievement. But on the other hand, if we have some proper goals or proper motivations, proper motives, I think it may be a reasonable motivation, then we can continue our, say, growth or further practice or say further studies or whatever it is.
Sir Bhante, that was the last question. So we have completed our time today as well. So we'll end the program. To end the program, I would like to first thank Bhante for his valuable time and answering all our questions, and also the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and the participants for joining the program and keeping the program going. Teruvan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai. Sukhi Hotu.